Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally Alcordi, and welcome to Public Advocate. Today, my guest is going to be Matthew Bergen, and he is a family rights advocate or activist. He's a family rights activist, and his Facebook page or group, which is directly under the screen for the radio program, is Americans United Against Tyranny. Now, that's interesting because he's from Australia. I'll be interested to find out how he became uniting of Americans. That's wonderful. Everybody in America, though, is from another country. So anyway, I just wanted to say that we were supposed to interview him last week, and we had a miscommunication or something went wrong, but I'm really happy to have him on today. But there was one other thing I wanted to mention. I tell you, I'm a little bit frazzled today. I've already had another interview and lots of emails, and you know how it goes. All righty. I'm going to pick up Matthew Bergen right now.
Hello, Matthew. Hi, Sally. How are you?
Well, it is a pleasure to speak with you, and I have to ask you the question I just mentioned I would, which is, how is it that you, all the way from Australia, and you still have an Australian accent, so you're probably not far long gone from there. How is it that you created a group that says Americans United Against Tyranny?
I didn't create the group. A gentleman down in Texas by the name of Michael Hutton created the group, and I met Michael Hutton last year when I was still in Australia on Facebook, back when he first started up the movement. And at that point in time, I was involved with a non-for-profit, which was based in Ohio, which is now being disbanded at the moment. And he brought me on board, I think it was about April this year, to put me in charge of the family division section of the group.
Wonderful. Okay, so, yeah, you're a family rights activist, and I am... can't tell you how many people who have vaccine-injured children will be very interested in this article, in this interview, because so many of the families who have vaccine-injured children find themselves targets of Children's Protective Services. So I'm assuming you deal in this kind of an issue.
Yes, and I actually, when was it? It must have been... back in I think it was May, I had a couple come to me in Texas that where they had refused to get their homeschool children immunized, and so they came to me and several other advocates, and we all worked together as a team. This was back when I first started with Michael Hutton, and basically, yeah, they didn't want to get their children immunized, so the doctor called Child Protection Services on them and had a case opened up.
Who called the school?
No, the doctor.
The doctor called Children's Protective Services on the family because they would not get their children immunized and they were homeschoolers. So there's no
correct
reason in God's green earth they would have had to if they were homeschoolers. This is outrageous.
So we advised the family, and we got together with them, and we spoke to them, and we told them what to do. You know, we educated them on what to do and what not to do and what to say. And luckily, less than a month later, they had their first hearing, and the judge closed the case.
Okay, let's talk about these hearings, shall we? Tell me how many members of the jury were present during this hearing.
None.
Right. That's my point, boy. Everything
because
that really matters... none of the public is not apprised of what really matters. This really matters.
Because Child Protection Services, generally the cases are heard in family or civil court instead of criminal court, to which the Constitution doesn't apply. So therefore, they're not entitled to a jury of their peers.
All right, sure. Uh-huh.
But see, child abuse
in regard to that.
If you look up a lot of the criminal code of child abuse and neglect, it comes under criminal. So why are these cases being heard in civil court and family court? They should be heard in criminal court, and therefore the Constitution does apply, and they should be entitled to a fair trial.
Well, that's very interesting. Let's talk some more about that, shall we?
Well, I mean,
would you call this a crime? A doctor calling Children's Protective Services on a family because they refused to vaccinate?
That is correct, because the doctor in the hospital is what's known as a mandated reporter, and he is to report when there's child abuse and neglect, whereas the Texas statutes do not define not getting your child immunized is not a criminal matter. It's not. It's a personal matter. It's a family decision.
Right. So if he reported this as child abuse, then he was completely out of line, and he's the one who is committing the criminal act.
That is correct. It's false reporting, which I believe should be a big fine. He also loses the right to be a mandated reporter, and also, I think, in extreme circumstances, serves a small time in prison.
Well, has he lost his job and is in prison currently?
No, ma'am.
Well, these are charges that need to be filed.
We went to the doctor of the medical board in Texas, and they didn't want anything to do with it. We went to the board of child protection services. They didn't want anything to do with it.
Well, this is a really important point you bring up, that the people themselves who are making these reports are in fact the criminals. I love turning the tables on these people. This is precisely what needs to happen.
Well, they should face charges, because if I were to ring up the police and say someone's assaulting me, and they're not really, and the police come out and find out that they're in fact not assaulting me and that it's me assaulting them, then I'm the one that gets in trouble because I did a false police report.
Well, what are the incentives for someone? Now, I'm assuming if he's done this to this family, he's done it to others.
I wouldn't know that. I only work on a case-by-case basis, so if families come
right
to me, I help them, you know.
Right. Well, are there gag orders? Because I know, for example, when you get a financial payout for a vaccine-injured child, which is extremely rare, and from what I understand can only be paid directly back into the medical industry's pocket, you can't pay your rent with it or anything useful, they basically give you a gag order. You can't talk about it if you're going to get the money. And they do the same thing with religious exemptions. Here in New York State, I was told by someone who got a religious exemption from a vaccine that she was told she couldn't talk about it. Well, of course, she told me about it because she couldn't believe she was told she couldn't talk about it or tell other people how she got it. What happens in these cases?
Well, that's a violation of the First Amendment, straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a constitutional right to be outspoken. And that's not applying to any court or anything. That's just your right as an American citizen, that you have the right to be outspoken.
Well, is there any kind of a gag order situation in these family courts?
There is sometimes, because in some states I believe it is against the law to talk about a child that has entered into the system. You know, I know of a case in Colorado where the grandmother got, she had a restraining order put against her by the department, and she posted a picture of her granddaughter on Facebook, so they violated her restraining order for that.
Wait, I'm confused. She violated her restraining order by posting a picture?
Yes. Yes, she did.
I see what you're saying. Okay, I thought you said the opposite, so I apologize.
No, that's okay.
Uh-huh. So, I have to tell you, I know four different instances of vaccine-injured children, three of them autistic, who were basically claimed by Children's Protective Services, even though they were not imperiled. When one child, they couldn't get out of the home, so they stole her out of school, and nobody stopped them. and it took years for this father to get his child back. The question is, do you see a preponderance of children who are vaccine injured, autistic and otherwise, who are targets of the Children's Protective Services?
To tell you the truth, the first case in Texas has been the last case that I've seen to do with vaccines. But as for autism, you see a lot of cases with children with disabilities because these child protection services gets more incentives for removing a disabled child than they do a normal one, which brings me on to one of my biggest passions over here is I hold a lot of interest in the Native American tribes, particularly in South Dakota with the Lakota people. Now, what's going on out there is for every child they take off the reservation, they automatically class as disabled, so they get more of an incentive than what they would do if they were just taking a normal child.
So this is a racial issue. When they take a child and they put them in some kind of a facility, I presume, are they vaccinated? Are they brought up to speed on their vaccination schedule? Because I've heard that.
Yes, as far as I know, that they are vaccinated and everything as soon as they're, because there's a lot more money to be made for, you know, large pharmaceutical companies. Now, see, I'm not too knowledgeable on what you do with the vaccines and everything. You know, I follow you on Facebook and I share your posts when I can. But, you know, I deal more with family court corruption. And I, like I said, I very rarely see vaccinations. They're more into, you know, they'll take away a child from a family and they say, oh, the child's traumatized, so, or they have ADD because they're misbehaving for the foster family.
Well,
so what they'll do is they'll...
What we're trying to do now is take the autism a diagnosis and change it into a conduct diagnosis. So they're trying to take it out of the realm of medical and put it in the realm of imprisonment. When you call autism a conduct problem, what does that imply to you? You know?
Well, a conduct problem, so autism is a conduct problem. So they're blaming the parents, basically.
Well, they're basically also trying to drive down the numbers, you know, when they had a huge elevation in polio after the polio campaign by UNICEF or Gavi, they renamed it flaccid paralysis and said they cured polio. They wiped out polio. Yeah, sure they did. They changed the name. It's easy to wipe something out. And such is it with autism, where the rates are skyrocketing. And so we'll just call it something else, and poof, there goes autism.
But see, it's all about money. It's all a big money game.
I'm listening.
Well, as we know, you know, basically that for every parental rights they terminate, they receive incentives. But on top of that, there's more incentives for the foster family, you know. Like you said, with autism, the federal government pays for all their appointments, all their medication.
Oh, brother. I used to put on comedy shows in homeless shelters, and I'll tell you, The real problem with homeless shelters is that you're forced to take medication to stay there. You can't have a roof over your head unless you're on these drugs. And this one homeless woman had to get a doctor's note every single day to avoid being medicated.
Well,
the homeless
that's
woman
enough.
Who has to get a doctor's note every single day. Can you believe it?
Well, that's just more money for the federal government, isn't it? But another thing, speaking about homeless, is that you'll notice that there is a large percentage of homeless people between the ages of 18 and 21. That's children aging out of the system because there is no incentive to hold on to them after they turn 18.
Ha! Huh. That's very interesting. I always also used to put on shows at Covenant House, which was the 18 to 21 year range of children. So that's why they were all homeless at that point, is because they had, you're not all of them, obviously, but that they had aged out of the system. Interesting.
Well, like I said, there's, you know, you get all these bonuses and everything being a foster family, but it's only until the child turns 18. So say you're a foster family that, say you're in your mid-30s and you're in this for the money, so you adopt an 8 to 12-year-old, then all you've got to do is hold on to them for 6 years. You're already a approved foster family, so turn them loose. 6 years later, you're in your 40s, get another one. You know, they treat them like assets.
That is very disturbing what you're saying. I'm sure it's true too, but it is.
I have everything I say is backed up by federal documents, which are quite accessible on the Congress website, on your state legislation website. If you look up AVCAR's reports, you know, it's all there.
Oh, I'm not questioning what you're saying. I'm just saying it is very sad. I'm sure you have a multitude of sad stories to share with us today, however.
Well, yeah, I have a lot of stories of families that have come to me, and not just in America, but in the UK as well, in Australia, in Canada, you know, it's in Scotland, in Ireland. You know, it's not just a problem over here. It's a problem everywhere.
So tell us what you would say is typical of cases that you've dealt with here in the United States. What would be a typical situation someone would call you in to help them navigate, basically?
A typical situation is I'll pull up a case here in Tennessee where. I'll do the Tennessee case. There was a case in Tennessee where there was some neighbors that were jealous of this family, that they had a better car than them. So in retaliation, they called Child Protection Services on them. The family had them come out 18 times and say, there's nothing going on here, nothing going on here, until the other family turned around and said, look, you've got to do something about this abuse. And CPS finally opened the case up against the family there. And basically they said, you know, you've got to do this and this and this. You've got to tidy up your house. You've got to do this. And they put them on parenting plans. You know, that's a typical case. Another case in Missouri recently that I had come to me was a friend of mine. A good friend of hers had one of his family friends call CPS on the family because he didn't want to deal drugs for them. So they turned around and called CPS. CPS stepped in and said, we're taking your daughter. And that was on molestation charges. The most common thing I see about Child Protection Services is that people
so
use it as a weapon
these
against
are,
someone.
These are blatant lies? These are blatant lies?
Yes.
Oh!
Fortunately, once again,
what about where the child is really being abused? You know, are any of these legitimate?
Some of them are legitimate, but you've got to weed out which ones are and which ones aren't, you know?
Well, wouldn't you think CPS would be their job, would be to weed out what's legitimate and what's not?
You'd think so, but, you know, I don't think they care.
Okay, what's their incentive monetarily? I've been told that to take a child away from a family, you get a $6,000 bonus. Is there anything, is this true?
So see, back in 1997, Bill Clinton signed in the Affordable Safe Families Act, which had a clause called the adoption incentives, which basically means for every child that CPS terminates parental rights on. Now, that's termination. They don't get any incentive until that termination happens. That's $4,000 for a regular child, $6,000 for a disabled one.
Oh, brother. Wow. That is so scary. That is so scary.
Unfortunately,
at
the moment...
See, now that's got to go. They're working on commission. They're working on, I mean, this is outrageous. This is trafficking.
Well, I'm glad you said at the moment it's got to go, because at the moment there's a bill sitting in the House that is the reauthorization of the adoption incentives, and it hasn't been passed yet.
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. What bill
so,
number? We'll get on it.
So now would be the time to, you know, write to your local legislators and write to your local congressmen and say, hey, you know, this bill doesn't need to be passed.
Okay, this is not local. This is federal. So we're talking about,
is it in Congress?
Is it in the Senate? And what number is it?
I believe it's in the Senate, and the number I will have to look up.
Okay, well, we will put that directly underneath this screen if you scroll down to the comment area. I'm saying that for the audience's benefit. Well, this is very exciting that they would be taking away incentives to remove children from their families. You know, so the bill is to reauthorize it, so we want to oppose it. If they're reauthorizing incentives to take children away from families, we need to oppose this. Am I correct?
Yeah, this needs to be stopped.
Okay.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to Facebook you here a story from the Children's Monitor, and it's basically saying, cool, Congress to pass the Adoption Incentives Program reauthorization, but there's a phone number here and the bill and everything, so we could do the opposite.
Absolutely, and we will.
You know, this is a long-term problem that's been happening for the last... I think that the earliest case that I've ever heard something happen to someone is the 1970s.
Well, the 1970s is that something happened to... Oh, you mean that something happened detrimental to a child?
Yeah, I had a woman come to me who had her child removed back when she was 20 on false allegations.
Right. I'm trying to figure out the last time what happened with the 1970s.
Vietnam happened in the 70s, I believe. I think,
okay.
Or maybe that was the 60s.
How does that relate to what we're talking about?
I don't think that it relates at all. You see, we were talking about the adoption incentive signed in 1997, but if you look into it deeper... you'll find that Jimmy Carter in the 1980s put forward the first proposal for this.
Why would anyone want to give incentives to remove children from their family? How sinister is this, and how glaringly so?
I have no idea. We'll have to ask Bill Clinton that.
He's the one who signed off on it?
He's the one that signed off on it. He's the one that put it all into legislation everywhere.
So this is something that is handled at the federal level, not at the state level.
It can be handled at the state or federal level, because some states are superseded from the federal government. Recently, earlier this year, Child Protection Services in Arizona, everyone got excited because, CPS is shut down. It wasn't shut down. It was turned into a private entity.
Okay, so this is like the privatizing of prisons as far as I'm concerned, right? Once you
basically
privatize...
Yes.
Okay. Okay, tell us about some other instances. I'm sure I'll have lots of questions about those. Tell me about other instances that you've encountered, please. Or you've worked on, obviously.
I wouldn't know where to start. There is just so many. You know, there's a little girl that was taken away on wrongful charges in Indiana. And she was placed into a home where the mother was on drugs and the little girl was actually killed.
Oh.
You know, recently there was a case in Texas where a foster child at the age of 2 was murdered.
Well, are there charges against the people who do murder them, or is there a blind eye turned towards that as well?
There are charges pressed against them, and they do face prison. But, you know, where was the mandated reporter? Where was the doctor then? You know, the child isn't, they're not just going to kill the child, you know. They're going to start abusing it first. Why wasn't the... See, this is where it gets interesting, you know. I can take my daughter to the doctors, and the doctor has to tell CPS that, you know, she came in with bruises. Even if she fell down on the playground and there was witnesses and school reports and everything, they still have to report on that. If I'm a foster family and I take my daughter in, or I take my adopted daughter in, no questions.
That's a really huge problem. Wow, this is really staggering.
You know, in Tennessee, 800 children last fiscal year was reported dead in foster care.
And there's been no investigation of these foster care families. I mean, why aren't the foster care families vetted better? I mean, certainly the parents are scrutinized, but not the that's what you're saying. If you take a child to a hospital or a doctor and they have bruises and it's a foster child, no question. If it's the natural
Very rarely.
Oh.
Well, I mean, look at the Justina Pelletina case in Massachusetts recently. Locked up in hospital.
Yep, I remember it well. It was almost unbelievable that, you know, what did they want, a second opinion? Well, so now we're getting into the medical industrial complex, which we were getting into when we were talking about the neglect of foster children who are not reported. It is very scary what's being allowed to go on, and the courts are just playing this game as well, right? Everybody at every level, from the police to the judges to the medical professionals to, everybody's in on this. Everybody's in on the racket the way they are with the shaken baby syndrome, right? Where the kid is dying from a vaccine-induced and the parents go to jail for life. Everybody's in on that.
Well, of course, everyone's in each other's pockets. You know, like most of the cases I come across have had their children removed without a warrant issued. That's a violation of the Fourth Amendment. Unlawful search and seizure.
A warrant needs to have been issued. Is
yes.
this true? So someone who says they're from CPS cannot enter your home without a warrant.
If you let them in, and if you say, all right, come in, then yeah, they can walk in without a warrant. But, you know, one of our most important things is that, you know, and you need to, you know, education is important, and you need to educate everyone that, you know, you don't have to let someone in your house of law enforcement or child protection services unless they have a warrant.
Now, what would be cause for a warrant? Somebody's complaint?
Suspected abuse.
Suspected abuse.
Yeah, if you're beating up your child, that's assault.
Right, but let's say the jealous neighbor we were just talking about. Did that come with a warrant? Did the CPS show up with a warrant in that situation?
Actually, in that case, they did.
They did show up with a warrant, but you've had situations or you know of situations where children were confiscated and the person from CPS did not have a warrant.
No, they did not. And because the parents weren't educated that CPS is corrupt, then, you know, a big portion of the work I do is education.
Now, what are some of the reasons they could claim were acceptable reasons to take children versus unacceptable reasons to take children?
Well, once again, that depends on state legislator and what's in the criminal code of conduct. But, you know, a good exception, you know, for taking children is sexual abuse. You know, if there's a child being sexually abused, get them out of there. You know, but then again, what proof do you have?
Okay, so that's one reason. What are other reasons?
Another reason for taking a child is having them malnutrition.
Okay, so if the child is being sexually abused, malnourished, and what have you. Well, so, but the thing is, I have read at one point that children could be taken at the discretion of the CPS worker. Like, you don't need a reason.
Well, I think that what needs to be done is a complete overhaul. People say we need to shut them down and stuff. You know, you're not going to get them shut down. But what they need is a complete overhaul by people who aren't on the payroll of CPS. You know,
well,
I think
a very big start would be to take away incentives for confiscating children. That is a huge issue here. I'm thrilled you brought that up. I'm glad we can take action.
Well, it's important to stand together on this, and there's a lot of divisions in the family rights group and stuff. Oh, I won't get into that, you know. There's a lot of infighting and stuff, not unlike the patriot movements and that sort of thing. You know, there's always people that disagree, but the main thing is that you're right. Go after their pockets. You cut off the incentive, and then you do a massive cleanup, and then you will find out who was in it for the money, and who was in it for the, you know, to actually help children. Let's take for example the CASA program and the Guardian Ad Litem program.
Now,
the
I
CASA
know,
program.
Go ahead.
The CASA program, to become a CASA worker, to represent the best interest of a child in court, is a 30-hour course.
That's nothing, right?
That's nothing.
Right. I have to say, my sister was institutionalized. She was severely mentally retarded, and my parents put her in an institution willingly, okay? But what I find out all these years later, as people are now dying and they're being honored and exalted for experimenting medically with the children in this institution. So I'm finding this out just within the past 3 years, that my sister was exactly where this man was doing these experiments. He was well-funded. We did not know about it. And then the subsequent institution, another man, highly honored with accolades to test vaccines. In both cases, she was a vaccine trial case. But these are things that we did not know. We did not know why she died at 23. But now I know. I'm not really wondering anymore. So what I'm saying is they do more. I mean, there are a multitude of abuses, but I am saying flat out there are medical experimentations on these children.
Seems it's a money game. You want my honest opinion? At the end of the day, that's all it is. It's about money. It's not about the children. It's not about the next generation. It's about money.
So besides the incentive program, how else do you see this? How can we affect the monetary? You're saying you're a private CPS in Arizona. What's the money game there?
the money game there is they've become a private entity, but the thing is they're still getting federal funding. That's the strange thing about it. Back in March this year, I saw a story when after they'd become privatized, run by the state instead of the federal government, they still received, I believe it was $876 million in budget from the federal government. And that's just one state.
What other things do we need to know? I mean, because there are a whole bunch of questions I'm not asking that I should be asking that you know people need to know. What would those be?
Another big important thing is the CAPTA. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Child Abuse and Prevention Treatment Act of 2010, which was just reauthorized. Basically, there is citizen review panels in every state that should be run by citizens, but because it wasn't really announced, CPS took them over. So now, and basically these review panels are run by the governor's office of that state, and they're supposed to look into discretions of child protection services cases.
So you've got the fox watching the hen house.
Basically, yeah.
Well, how can that be changed? How can it be built to change that? Or is there any citizen activism to change that?
Well, look into your local, do a search on Google of your local, like if you're in Arizona, do a search on Arizona CAPTA citizen review panels.
Well, that's the whole idea here. We need to get the public's eyes on every aspect of this issue. And if this will achieve that, yes, we should do that. And quite frankly, as you say, it's supposed to be a citizen review panel. So it's been hijacked.
Yes, it has, just like the state's ombudsman program. The state's ombudsman program is being infected by CPS as well.
Okay, so what do you recommend? That citizens in every state form a coalition that will act voluntarily to assess the people who are, or replace the people who are currently doing the assessing, to assess themselves as is already a federal law, or is that a law per state?
It's a law per state.
I see. So you would know which states the citizens would have a panel, and you would know the states where they do not have a panel?
Yeah, I do have a document somewhere that has a list of them all.
Okay, I've got a start.
I've got so many documents and bills and research that I have to go over and, you know, do release, you know, over time, so that way people aren't slapped with a whole bunch of information at once, you know?
Right. No, but what you're talking about is a solution. So
yes.
We need to follow that up, because I know people in every state who are a vaccine. This is very related to vaccines because it's all about children. So don't think for a second that people who are concerned about vaccines are not also concerned about this. They are hand in glove related.
People need to start standing up and getting together. You know, if you disagree with someone, don't have an argument with them. Step back and reassess and come up with a solution together that you both agree on. You know, there's too much infighting at the moment between groups. If you're out there for the same thing, why fight with someone who wants to achieve the same goal as you? It's just going to slow you down.
Right. Well, I support everything that other people do in regard to vaccine activism. And I really don't care what they're doing. They're doing something. I may not agree with it, But it, you know what? If you're marching in the right direction, I'm in your corner, you know? So I agree with you. People need to not be critical to the point of being ineffective.
Well, that's right. And, you know, my network is growing every day. You know, I when I first came over here, you know, I started doing this in Australia and that. And now I you know, back when I, you know, I was connected, but I wasn't that well connected, you know, and I came over here, and now after the midterm elections and everything, I'm very politically active over here. You know, our group is a conservative grassroots movement, and you've seen our membership. We're growing and growing every day, so.
Well, you know, it's funny, because I call legislators all the time, and they're all on my speed dial at this point. But I basically say to Democratic legislators, why is being a Democrat not being pro-family? Why does family have anything to do with your political stance? There are Democrats who are fathers and mothers. They care about families. Why do Democrats keep dropping the ball when it comes to families and family rights?
My advice to people, if you want to contact your local legislators or you want to contact your local offices, go Republican or Independent. Do not bother with Democrats or Liberals.
Right, but this is ludicrous. Do you see where, I mean, I literally say to them, since when is, you know, the right to choose whether your child gets a medical treatment or not? Why are Democrats throwing that to the wind? What's the matter with you people? Your parents? It's, you know, I really don't get it. I think the pharmaceutical companies... I'll tell you what I think it is. I think the pharmaceutical company shores up the Democrats and the war machine shores up the Republicans. I think it comes down to that.
Well, I mean, yeah. Democrats are easily bought. Why do you think they've been in control until this year?
Well,
you know, if you go look up this adoption incentives reauthorization, you'll find that it's mostly Democratic support.
Oh, disgusting! Will you please? We only have a minute left. I want you to say something that will conclude this very important interview.
Well, I want to conclude it with that no matter how alienated CPS wants you to feel, that there is people out there, there is support groups out there, you know, get with people who are like-minded, get with people who are dealing with the same situation, and because you're not alone.
Right, and a CPS officer is not entitled to enter your home without a warrant.
That is correct.
Any other basic things people should know?
CPS is not your friend. Comply, but to a certain extent. Don't let them push you around. They're not there to help you. They're there. Most of them are there for money.
Thank you very much, Matthew Virgin. I really appreciate your coming on this program today. Please go to his group, Americans United Against Tyranny, and join the group and get active. We just discussed two ways in which we will be getting active. We will put additional information in the comment area under this radio program, so please refer to it and join us, because I can feel every bit I will be helping. Because I know what's going on once they get your kid, and it's all about vaccines, so.
Well, thank you very much, Sally.
Thank you, Matthew Virgin. All the best.